Okay, so we'll start as we usually do with some few minutes of watching the breath. We'll do the visualization. We'll make the request according to the verse that we're going to be going through, or the point that we're going to be going through, which will be fortitude today. We'll start out with fortitude. We finished going through the Bodhisattva vows. We completed the talking about the six perfections in general and how they relate to each other. And then last week we talked specifically about the perfection of generosity and the perfection of ethical conduct. So today we'll start with the perfection of fortitude. Okay, so let's start out watching our breath, letting the mind settle down. Space in front. Imagine the Buddha surrounded by all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, yourself surrounded by all the sentient beings. Remember, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are made of light and they're living beings. You're not visualizing a collection of statues. As we recite the verses, think that we're leading all the sentient beings, friends, enemies, and strangers, in generating the thoughts contained in the verses, and transforming our mind as well, so that we really feel the meaning of what we're saying. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, and present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mentally transformed. I confess all my destructive actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until cyclic existence ends and turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the great awakening. This ground anointed with perfume Overstrewn Mount Meru, for land, sun, and moon. Imagined as the Buddha land and offered to you, may all beings enjoy this pure land.
Venerable
holy gurus, in the space of your truth body, from billowing clouds of your wisdom and love, let fall the rain of the profound and extensive Dharma in whatever form is suitable for subduing sentient beings. Idam Guru Ratna Mantalakam Niryataya. Glorious and precious Red Guru, sit upon the lotus and moon seat on my crown, guiding me with your great kindness, bestow upon me the attainments of your body, speech, and mind. The eyes through whom the vast scriptures are seen, supreme doors for the fortunate who would cross over to spiritual freedom, illuminators whose wise means vibrate with compassion, to the entire line of spiritual mentors I make request. Tayata mani mani ma mani asoha. Tayata mani mani ma mani asoha. Tayata mani mani ma mani asoha. Tayata on the Guru Buddha on your head, and then we make request. For the sake of all mother sentient beings, may I quickly attain complete and perfect Buddhahood. For that purpose, first, I will not retaliate, even if all sentient beings rise up against me. May I not feel even a moment's anger, and instead, in response to their harm, may I benefit them. May I and others fully accomplish the Buddha's teaching, the perfection of fortitude, and so forth. And two, may I practice the fortitude to endure suffering. When unwanted misfortune occurs, being deprived of food, wealth, beds, and so forth, falling ill suddenly and the like, may I see these miserable experiences are the fruit of destructive karma accumulated in the past. In this way, may I purify myself of many destructive karmas and see that there is no call to reject suffering. Especially may I see that putting up with hardship in relationship to spiritual practice brings me closer to the path to omniscience. May I accept hardships, and by practicing fortitude, may the stream of samsaric dukkha and that of the lower realm cease for me and others. Three, may I practice the fortitude of the Dharma. Furthermore, vast are the effects of generating firm belief in the maturation or ripening effects of destructive and constructive karma, in the inspiration of the three jewels and the inconceivable power of great beings such as Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And in unsurpassed awakening, the 12 kinds of scriptures and the different points of the Bodhisattva precepts. Consequently, once I have cultivated faith in them to attain unsurpassed awakening, may I correctly train in the different aspects of the Bodhisattva precepts, the subject matter of the 12 categories of scriptures. Guru Buddha, please inspire me to be able to do so. In response to your requesting the Guru Buddha, five colored light and nectar stream from all the parts of his body into you through the crown of your head. The light and nectar absorb into your body and mind and into those of all the sentient beings around you. It purifies all your negativities and obstructions accumulated since beginningless time. And especially they purify all illnesses, interferences, negativities, and obstructions that interfere with correctly training in the practices of the three kinds of fortitude. Your body becomes translucent, the nature of light. All your good qualities, lifespan, merit, and so forth expand and increase. And think in particular that a superior realization of correct training in the practice of the three kinds of fortitude has arisen in your mind stream and in the mind streams of others. So here we're starting with the third of the far-reaching practices or perfections. Okay, so it's the three kinds of fortitude. And I use the word fortitude instead of patience because in English, patience has the connotation of waiting for somebody. Just be patient, you know, wait on, wait for something to happen. And that's a very passive word, whereas fortitude is a more, it has more oomph to it. Yeah. Huh?
It's robust. It's robust.
Yes, it's robust. That's a good word for it. It's very robust. So, because fortitude implies having internal strength, and that's exactly what we're trying to cultivate here is internal strength so that we don't crumble and fall apart in three kinds of situations. One being when others harm us and so we wish to retaliate, so not just crumbling and, you know, giving way to our anger and retaliating. The second is situations where we experience suffering. Maybe we go through a difficult time, or we're experiencing illness, or some kind of intense physical or mental suffering. Again, so that we don't crumble and just fall apart, but can actually practice Dharma in that situation. And then the third is so that we have some internal strength when we're practicing the Dharma. And again, we don't just crumble and fall apart when we experience difficulties in our Dharma practice. Because clearly if we do that, we're never going to get anywhere. Okay, so we need to have this internal strength in order to transform difficulties into the path so that we can continue practicing no matter what the situation is. Because if our Dharma practice is always dependent on having good situations and being comfortable, how much practice are we going to get done in one lifetime? Not much, because how often are we totally comfortable and in a good mood and feel like, you know, learning, etc., etc.? Okay? So we have to be able to learn how to transform difficulties and make them part of the path, and in the process of doing so, making our own mind strong. Okay? Because if we crumble in the face of suffering and samsara, then, yeah, then we're going to be even more miserable than we were. Yeah? Because we'll give way to our anger, we'll give way to our self, you know, to defeatism. Yeah, we'll just give up. And that doesn't benefit us or anybody else. Okay? So that's why I think the word fortitude has that, to me it has that implication of internal strength, which is what we're trying to develop. You know, some people, they want to develop their muscles and have external strength. But, you know, from a Buddhist viewpoint, being courageous and beating somebody up is an actual courage. It's just creating negative karma and beating up somebody who's going to die anyway at some time or another. Yeah, so Shantideva says, you know, harming others physically, you're killing them, it's like slaying corpses. You know, somebody is going to die anyway, and so you have to beat them up or do something to it to make it happen a little faster. Yeah, but that's, you know, from a Buddhist viewpoint, total waste of time and energy, and, you know, just creates a lot of negativity, doesn't, you know, propel us on the path. Whereas if we have internal strength, you know, that so that we can remain calm and centered and clear-minded no matter what's going on around us, then, you know, as they say, all hell could break out, but we're going to be okay and we'll be able to manage the situation. Yeah, so there's a lot of advantages to practicing fortitude, and a lot of disadvantages to giving way to anger. Yeah, because when we just give way to anger, then, yeah, I mean, then essentially we're defeated. Yeah, because we've, you know, the afflictions have overpowered us when we give way to anger. And we have no control. No, our body, speech, and mind are out of our control. We say and do things that later we look back and say, oh my God, did I really say that? Did I really do that? Because, you know, we were totally uncontrolled. Then we did something. Now we have to experience the result of what we did. And, you know, the prison work that we do really shows us this, because sometimes the guys will tell us their stories of how they wound up in prison. And, you know, you can see it was, you know, unwise decisions, and most often, sometimes the decisions were made out of greed, but most of the time out of anger, you know. And then, of course, you know, doing something, then winding up in prison, then et cetera, et cetera. Yeah? even if you don't wind up in prison, getting involved in the U.S. justice, injustice system is not fun. You know, it's a big pain in the neck. Yeah. So it's not something that we want, you know. But anger kind of just makes us so weak that we wind up in very difficult situations doing really dumb things. Can you think of dumb things you did motivated by anger? Yeah. So, yeah. We should have a storytelling time sometime about dumb things we did. It's very good, you know, because then it becomes, we really motivate each other to learn to control our anger when we hear about, you know, what other people have done when they've been angry. Okay, so, yeah, and then getting angry, you know, I mean, in addition to problems with the law and breaking trust in relationships and damaging the people that we love very much, or damaging the relationships with them very much. In addition to all of this, the anger destroys merit that we've created before. So, you know, even bodhisattvas, if a lower bodhisattva gets angry at a higher bodhisattva, they destroy, you know, eons of merit. So you can imagine how much merit we destroy if we get angry with a bodhisattva. Yeah, or even just we get angry with a regular sentient being who, you know, not even an Arya bodhisattva. But you can feel it, you know, when you get angry, then afterwards your energy is so different and you don't have that feeling of support that you have, you know, after you've cultivated virtue for a long time. Yeah, and so the anger, if it's very severe, it can prevent virtue created over a long period of time from ripening at all. Or in lesser cases, the virtue may be able to ripen, but the result won't last very long, or the happy result won't be so great. It'll be quite diluted and diluted. You know, and shorter. So, you know, the anger interferes not only with happiness in this life, but, you know, very severely with attaining the path and gaining the realizations on the path. Yeah. And so, I mean, you can think about it, you know. When you think of the Buddha, do you ever think of the Buddha exploding in a fit of temper? No, you know, I mean, that clearly that's one quality of a Buddha, is they're not going to explode like that. Similarly with the bodhisattvas, you know, why do we trust them? Because we trust their compassion, and we trust they're not going to totally lose it and explode and, you know, act in a very erratic way. Yeah, whereas, you know, when we have a bad temper, it's very difficult for other people to trust us because they don't know when they see us who they're going to see from day to day. Because one day we're in a good mood, the next day we're in a foul mood and angry. Yeah, and so if we're an angersome person, you know, people kind of, okay, well, good morning. Are they in a good mood or are they in a bad mood? Do I need to walk on eggshells or can I relax and be myself? Yeah. And some people say, forget about walking on eggshells. If they're going to be like that, I'm going to be just as aggressive back to them. Yeah. And so then we have primetime reality television in our own life. Yeah. So, you know, it's very helpful to think about the defects of anger because that gives us some impetus to work on our anger, you know, and really practice these meditations. If we don't think of the defects of anger, then we don't see it as something bad, And especially because anger can be deceptive, it can give us a sense of power when we feel helpless and weak, you know, because when we get angry, our adrenaline starts going, we feel a sense of power. Of course, it's a false sense of power, you know. Why do we get angry? Because we feel we have no power. Okay? So it's a false sense of power, but it can really create quite a mess for us. And then also, you know, some people just become afraid of us. And if somebody is very angersome, you know, people just don't even want to go near that person because it's so unpleasant, or because they're afraid of the person, you know? Am I going to say good morning and the person is going to start screaming at me? Yeah, so nobody really likes to have relationships like that. But again, if we don't think of the faults of our anger, then we just go act out the anger and then wonder afterwards why our relationships with other people aren't as loving and warm and trusting as we would like them to be. You know, and it's because of our own behavior, our own anger. Do you know people like that who, when you see them, you're not sure exactly who you're going to meet that day? You could meet a person who's quite pleasant, or, you know, they have such a problem with anger that nothing happens, and they could be, like, outraged, and you don't know who you're meeting. Yeah, so it creates this feeling of, like, not feeling very safe around that person and thus wanting to avoid them. Okay, and you know, sometimes people confuse fear with respect. Yeah, this happens a lot with the guys in prison. They think if somebody is afraid of them, that person respects them. Quite the opposite, you know. I think when we're afraid of somebody, we don't respect them, we don't trust them. Yeah, so we may kind of look like, okay, do what you want, go ahead, you know, and we do that out of fear, but it's certainly not done out of respect. Respecting somebody and fearing them are very, very different, I think. Okay, so we have to ask ourselves, what kind of person do we want to be? You know, somebody that others are afraid of, somebody that others can't trust, somebody that, you know, is totally unpredictable? Or do we want to be somebody who others feel relaxed around, who they can trust and feel in ease about and share things with? Yeah? So when we talk about working with anger, we're not talking about stuffing our anger. This is quite important. Sometimes, you know, I'm talking here about the people who blow their cork and, you know, yell and scream and throw things. So then people may get the idea, well, you know, okay, I'll just keep my anger to myself and I won't yell and scream and throw things, but I'll just stuff my anger down. Well, that isn't freeing ourselves from anger either, because we're just as angry and it's going to come out in all sorts of other ways in our behavior. So we're not talking about stuffing the anger. We're talking about learning techniques so that we can see the situation in a different way, and therefore the anger evaporates and it isn't there to start with. Okay? So I won't have, you know, be able to go into all the details of how to practice fortitude and overcome anger, but I want to refer you to two things. One is the book Working with Anger, okay, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama's Healing Anger. And then the other is a series of 10 talks that I just gave in Mexico, that if you go to Face Buddha, FACEBUDA.org or com or whatever it is, the their you know, archive there. Will we have them on our website soon?
Yeah, the first one is up.
Oh, the first one's up. Okay, so more will be put up. So, you know, really watch those, because that's going into all of this in much more detail than I can do it here. Okay? And the trick is, when we learn any of these methods for working with anger, it's important to practice them very regularly. If we don't, then they're not going to be there when we need them. It's like if you're learning to type and you practice typing, you know, the beginning of the month, and then you don't do it again for another 3 weeks, and then after that you don't do it again for another 3 weeks, you're not going to learn to type because you're not doing it continuously so that it becomes an automatic habit with you. So, you know, it's very important to do these meditations again and again and apply them especially to situations that have happened to us in our own lives, you know, so that we can sometimes work through anger that we've been holding on to for quite a long time. You know, but when we pull out things from the past in order to practice these different ways of looking at the situation and different techniques for managing anger, it can really help us work through a lot of stuff from the past and put it down. Yeah. Because, let's face it, who wants to carry around a lot of bad feelings towards people because of what they did to you 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 decades ago? You know, it's like, come on. That just harms us when we're like that. Okay, so the first kind of fortitude is that fortitude to not retaliate. Yeah, somebody harms us, they may criticize us, insult us, hit us, you know, who knows what, but we don't retaliate. So we talked before, not very long ago, about these four practices of bodhisattvas of not retaliating. Okay, so when others are angry with us, not getting angry in return. When others beat us, not to beat them in return. When others deride us, not to deride them in return. And when others point out our faults, not to pick at their faults in return. So in the Bodhisattva vehicle, those are called four ascetic practices. Yeah, we usually think of asceticism as, you know, restraining from, you know, having food or physical comfort. But this is a real ascetic practice mentally of holding back the mind from just letting it, you know, go any which way. Okay? So, you know, I was talking to somebody today, and, you know, what we were talking about is a perfect example of not retaliating when somebody harms you. So the people at the Abbey know that one of our friends, his daughter, on Wednesday night was shot and killed by her estranged husband. So the estranged husband came over, killed our friend's daughter, and killed, she had another friend over there, and then tried to kill himself. He didn't succeed, but he did die this morning from the wounds that he inflicted upon himself. So 3 people's lives lost because of his anger. And then, of course, they had 3 little kids, and they had all of, you know, multiple grandparents, because both sets of grandparents had divorced and several of them had remarried. So, you know, so lots of people affected, you know, by this. And so our friend was, when I talked to him today, he was saying that some people are coming over and, you know, just saying, you know, don't you wish you could kill your son-in-law? Look what he did, you know, don't you just hate him for what he did? And Bob said no, you know. And he said hating him would be totally against who I am and whatever I've been trying to do in my practice for years. And you could tell by the way he said that the way he talked, he completely felt that, you know? And then we were talking about, you know, even, you know, somebody killed his little girl. He talked about his daughter, who was 34, you know, his little girl. You know, he really meant it. And he said, you know, imagine that person's state of mind that he would do such a thing. Yeah, I mean, he's got to be in extreme confusion, extreme pain. And so, you know, what's the sense of hating him? You know, so it was uncomfortable for him when certain people would come over to the house and as a way of trying to be kind and help him grieve, you know, would encourage him to be angry. And he said, I just can't go there. I can't do that. Yeah. So, you know, that's really practicing fortitude in this situation. Because many people would just be furious, you know, and take it out not only on the son-in-law who already died, but even on the son-in-law's parents, or even on who knows what, you know. And he felt none of that. And in fact, he was telling me that actually all the parents are quite close, all the families are quite close. Yeah, so everybody's kind of grieving together. Yeah, pretty intense. What was also interesting, what he said, is that he was very moved by all the support and love and compassion people are showing, but at the same time, everybody's emotion was really exhausting for him, you know, and he couldn't. It's hard to take care of yourself when, you know, there's a steady flow of people who are all grieving and they're trying to help you grieve, but they're grieving, so then you try and help them. And because there's so many of them, you get really exhausted. So he would take breaks every now and then and just go and do his practice. And he said, my practice has really been what's holding me now, you know, and enabling me to be calm throughout all of this. So it's quite amazing, I mean, how strong his practice is and how he's really taking refuge in, you know, he's doing Medicine Buddha and King of Prayers, and I sent him the verses from Nagarjuna. Yeah, but how that's really holding him through this. You know, whereas some other people might be totally, you know, in a similar situation, would have been totally consumed in rancor and revenge and, you know, be out of control. But that's certainly not the case with him. Yeah. Although not an easy situation, yeah. When your child is murdered, because, I mean, it's something that you never expect would happen, you know, and then there it is, it's there, and you got to deal with it. Okay, then the second kind of fortitude is the fortitude of enduring suffering. Okay, so this is when, for example, we're ill, or we face who knows what kind of obstacles, you know. Our text here says unwanted misfortune. Okay, so being deprived of food, wealth, yeah, comfortable places to stay, you fall ill suddenly, you know, maybe you have depression, or, you know, you lose your job, or your marriage breaks up, or your kids are rebelling and say they hate you, or, you know, your you have to go to Iraq for the, you know, or Afghanistan for the fourth deployment, or, you know, I mean, who knows what it is, but some kind of really difficult suffering situation, okay? So instead of having that difficulty and then just going, hey, I can't handle this, why is this happening to me? It's not fair, it's not right, this is bad, you know, and just completely, yeah, dissolving, crumbling, yeah, like a sandcastle, you know. Then, you know, what is recommended here is to see that these miserable experiences are the fruit of my own destructive karma accumulated in the past. Yeah? So maybe somebody, we don't have such a good relationship with somebody, or, you know, we have all sorts of difficulties that occur in our lives, because after all, this is samsara, and that, which means the nature is difficulties. Yeah, we have to deal with death, aging, sickness, not getting what we want, getting what we don't want, all these things, you know. They're coming in samsara, and they're going to keep coming in samsara. Yeah? And so when they do, to be able to think, this is a result of my own destructive karma. And if we can, you know, if we really have strong conviction in the law of karma and its effects, then we can completely accept the situation. Yeah? This is coming to me because I created the cause. So there's no use complaining to anybody else. There's no use being angry at anything. And if I don't like this experience, this suffering, then I've got to learn from it and stop creating the cause for it. Yeah? Because if I don't have fortitude, and in the face of this suffering, I, you know, start drinking and self-medicating and or lashing out at other people or being totally unpleasant or justifying, you know, cheating other people or doing who knows what. Because when we're under that kind of stress, we can often give ourselves leeway to really act quite negatively. And if we do that, then we're just perpetuating that whole situation, creating more negative karma. Whereas when we're able to deal with that suffering situation and say, this is a result of my own karma, and I've got to bear it. Yeah? And then we bear it, then that karma is over, it's purified, it can never ripen again, it's no longer obscuring our mind. Yeah. And also our mind is calm after that. Yeah. So, you know, especially when there's family problems and all, it's very good. I mean, this was what I was practicing this last summer, is, you know, this is a result of my own karma, nobody else to blame. Yeah, if I don't like it, I better stop creating the karma to experience this. Yeah, and then especially if you think this is karma that could have ripened in a huge, horrible, you know, suffering in a lower rebirth for eons, but instead you're having a little bit of mental unhappiness right now, or you're having a little bit of sickness right now, then, you know, if you think like that, you actually are purifying a huge amount of negative karma. And when you think about it, then you're getting off easily. Because that karma, you know, what would you rather have, you know, 35 million eons in the hell realm, or experiencing, you know, a sore throat for a week? You know, it kind of like says to us, grow up, kid, you know, because we have a sore throat. Oh, God, oh, I'm so sick. I can't do anything. My throat hurts for a week. Feel sorry for me. Do something for me. I've got to go to ER for this sore throat. You know? And yeah? Whereas if we really sat and thought, okay, it's either this or 35 million eons in the hell realm, hey, you know, a sore throat is like child's play. You know, you take it any day. Oh, I am so happy to have a sore throat. Yeah? So when we, you know, face difficulties and suffering, to be able to say to ourselves, oh, I'm so happy this is happening. Then, you know, all the negative karma is getting used up. So I've tried to practice that a few times. One time, it really worked quite well. I was, I forgot to tell this story in Mexico. Yeah, there were several, I was telling a lot of stories and somehow I forgot to do this one. But I was on pilgrimage in Tibet in 1987 in the summer, and we were going to Lamo Latso, you know, the lake where you can see the different images in it. So I was with a couple of Tibetans and then a couple of Westerners, and we were riding on horseback. Yeah. So I had a nice, very gentle horse, thank goodness. But one of my friends had a horse that was really not very cooperative. And so it was walking across a stream one time. The stream wasn't very deep, but the horse just stopped in the middle and like wouldn't budge. So this person is somebody who has a temper, you know. I mean, I've known him for many, many years, and has a temper and gets bent out of shape when there's difficulty. And so when that happened, I said to him, do you want to change horses? Yeah, because my horse is very sweet, and, you know, I don't mind sitting in the middle of a stream for a while, as long as the horse eventually goes across, you know. Anyway, because I was trying to be kind to him. Anyway, he blew up at me, totally got so angry at me. And da-da-da-da-da-da, and so-and-so told me, you know, that 5 years ago when you were at this Dharma center, you did this and that and that, and so-and-so here told me you did this and that, and I mean, just pulling out all these kinds of things, I mean, furious. So I, there's one way that you meditate where you imagine giving the pain to the self-centered thought. Yeah, and thinking, okay, self-centered thought is my real enemy because it's the one that made me create the karma to have all this unpleasantness. So, okay, here's the unpleasantness. I'm glad it's happening. You know, that this karma's ripening. And I'm going to give all the pain and discomfort to my self-centered thought. So I put my self-centered thought out here, and all of his angry words, I just directed them there, you know. Kind of how you, you know, transfer a phone call, you know. Like it's not even coming to me, it's going directly to my self-centered thought. So I actually managed to stay quite calm during the whole thing. And even that evening when we were camping, my mind was quite calm. Usually this kind of thing, I feel so hurt and, you know, what's going on and how could somebody treat me like this? But I was totally calm, you know? And so that kind of thing, you know, thinking, oh, this is the fault of my self-centered thought. I'm giving the pain to my self-centered thought. Yeah, I'm glad this is ripening because now this karma is over. Yeah, and it's better than a bunch of Hell Realm rebirths. And then, you know, you manage to be okay in the situation. So, you know, when you can do that, and this comes through practicing, like I said, repeatedly on a, you know, a near daily basis, when you can do that, then you have real power. Yeah, so power doesn't mean power to dominate somebody. You know, power means power over your own crazy mind, so that your own crazy mind doesn't, you know, take the ball and run with it and, you know, drag you along behind it to who knows where. Okay? So these techniques are quite powerful and very good to practice. Okay? And I've been thinking for a long time, you know, especially as you get older, you begin to, you know, the meditation on death begins to, like, make a little bit more sense when you're younger. And so it's really clear that, okay, if I live so long, unless I die soon, I'm going to have to face aging and sickness. For sure. 100% sure. The only way to avoid aging and sickness is to die first. Other than that, and I don't prefer to die first, then 100% I'm going to have to deal with my body falling apart and my mind falling apart. So I might as well get used to that idea and accept that reality. And I don't know when it's going to come. It could come suddenly, you know, you get in an accident and lung, or you have a stroke, you know, from one day to the next you have a stroke, or you have a heart attack, or who knows what. But sometime it can come very suddenly, or it may come gradually. But I'm no longer going to be able to do what I'm doing now. 100% certain. Okay, so, yeah, of course, there's lots of things I would like to do now before that comes, and I sure wish I could plan it. But this is not something that we can plan. It just happens when the karma's ripe. Okay, and we have to be ready to adjust to that karma ripening, even if we don't like what that karma is. Okay, or what the situation is. And so saying, okay, this is going to happen, I better get used to it. How am I going to think? You know, how am I going to manage my mind when my body can't do what it wants to do, and even when my mind won't be able to do what it wants to do? Yeah? How will I think? How can I apply Dharma to this kind of situation? Yeah, because if I don't apply Dharma, then I'm going to be some crotchety old lady who all she does is whine and complain and bicker and, you know, like that. And that's exactly the kind of person you want to live with, don't you? You know? You know, if you think my complaining now is bad, you know, just imagine what it's going to be like if I don't practice and I wind up old and, you know, this blade of grass is too long. Yeah? And are you guys, you're still putting bleach in the dishwater? When are you going to get over that? I don't care what the health department says.
That's why you're not in charge.
We could get a washing machine, a dishwasher.
It's too expensive. just spend $30,000 on a dishwasher?
Maybe there's some on sale.
You go find the $30,000 first. So, knowing that this kind of thing is going to be happening, then you have to plan for it. Yeah? And it's like, okay, how am I going to think when I can't do what I want? Yeah? I want to go walk in the forest, but my legs don't work. Take out the palanquin. Of the palanquin today. I can't take it.
I'm first in line.
Yeah. You know? Alternatively, there's the wheelbarrow. Like in our skits. You remember the skit? Yes. So, okay, so you can wheel me around in a wheelbarrow. Okay. So, to really try and prepare for these kinds of things. No? Because who knows what karma's going to ripen and what life is going to throw our way. We don't know. Yeah? One part of my mind thinks, well, if I can plan for all the most awful things, then none of them will happen.
Really?
Yeah. You know how the mind kind of makes up things? Like, if I don't, the one I don't think of, that's the one that's going to happen. So I've got to think of all the awful things and figure out how to practice in all of them. And then none of them will happen. Which means I'll die early. No, that's not what I want. Yeah? Okay, so... So the second kind of fortitude, to endure suffering. And then the third kind is the fortitude to practice the Dharma. Okay? And so here, it's to the fortitude to stick with your practice. Yeah? To overcome doubts, to overcome ignorance. To develop very strong conviction in cause and effect. Yeah? To understand what it means to receive the blessings of the three jewels, to understand the inconceivable qualities of the great beings. Yeah? To understand the 12 kinds of scriptures and, the forward and reverse kinds of dependent arising and all the different arguments for proving emptiness, and even understanding why the Chittamatrans say what they do. Yeah? If you think Madhyamaka is difficult, study Chittamatra. To understand the Bodhisattva precepts and the Tantric precepts and, all these things really well, and to cultivate faith and conviction in them. Yeah. And when meditating on emptiness, being willing to go through the difficulty of listening to the teachings and not understanding them. Because it's a whole different language. I mean, even in English, it's words and concepts that we've never thought of before. Yeah? Did you ever hear about true existence when you were a kid? Existing by its own characteristics or mutual dependent designation? I mean, the whole study is filled with terms that we've never heard before, filled with concepts we've never thought about or understood before. So of course it's going to be difficult. Yeah. So to have some fortitude that can go through this process of studying the teachings, thinking about them, and then meditating on them, and watching your sense of I get challenged. Yeah. So if we're really meditating correctly, there's going to be some discomfort because, you know, the self-grasping ignorance is not going to go away easily and say, okay, yeah, you see that what I'm grasping at doesn't exist. That's fine. I surrender. No, it's not going to do like that. Yeah? And so there's going to be some discomfort watching everything, our whole world that we've constructed, our whole ego identity, our whole thought of who we are, you know, disintegrate. Yeah? And being willing to have that happen with faith and confidence that it's leading you to a realization of reality. Yeah? And to have that faith and confidence because you've studied and thought about the teachings, because you've done purification, because you've created merit. Yeah? And so being willing to undergo the difficulties of doing 111,111 long prostrations. Yeah? Of the difficulty of doing, you know, the various nindra practices and retreats and studying the different texts and so on. You know, because it takes some energy and some fortitude to do these things and then to let them affect your mind. Okay, so the fortitude of practicing Dharma, very, very important. Because without that, some kind of fortitude to continue, then when things get a little bit difficult, then it's like, okay, where's the bakery? I'm going to go for a piece of chocolate cake and I'm never coming back. Yeah. And you see people do this, you know, people have been in the Dharma for years and then they just get to a certain point where like their karma runs out and their fortitude runs out and they run off. And it's so sad to see that happen, you know, when somebody has like a precious human life and such good conditions to practice and then something happens in their mind, you know, where they can't continue. So to always have a very strong mind regarding the Dharma. And I remember thinking when I first ordained, and I have remembered this subsequently, that when I'm unhappy, it's not the fault of the external situation, it's the fault of the afflictions. So when I'm unhappy, you know, it's the afflictions I have to work with. It's not, you know, let's tweak my samsara and rearrange my duckies. Okay, yeah, so you have, you know, you have to go through difficulties. Sometimes your teacher scolds you. You know, my teachers have scolded me. They've ignored me. I haven't told you all the stories.
They scolded you?
Huh?
You were scolded?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard these.
And then they, you know, just ignore me. Hmm. So, yeah, so you have to have something that, you know, so that you can go through this. Yeah, I mean, even His Holiness scolded me once. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I asked a question. I asked the question about subtle afflictions and subtle ignorance. And he said, I just got done teaching that. Weren't you listening? No. I guess not. Yeah. So. Okay. So, questions so far before we go on to the next one?
Well, Honorable, when you were doing the third one, I went back and I said, well, aren't the first two also the fortitude of practicing the Dharma? The fortitude not to retaliate and the fortitude not to, to be able to deal with the sufferings of
Yeah, but I mean, the fortitude of practicing the Dharma is difficult situations when you're actively practicing. The fortitude of non-retaliation is when people criticize you and mistreat you. Yeah, so you may not even be in a situation where you're in a Dharma situation at all, and it has nothing to learn about learning and studying. It's just, you know, Joe Blow at the gas station is ticked off with you. Okay, and similarly with the second one, you know, the fortitude of undergoing suffering if you're sick, you know, that doesn't have anything. I mean, you could, if getting sick, you just have to take it as part of the path. Maybe you can't do the practice you want to because you're sick. And you just have to, you know, deal with that in the mind.
Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, without the Dharma practice, there would become real difficulties. I mean, the fortitude wouldn't be there.
Right.
Everything but practice.
Yeah. But the thing is, we can say we're Dharma practitioners and not practice any of those fortitudes. That's the point, is we say we're Dharma practitioners, but as soon as we have a problem, we act like people who don't know anything at all about the Dharma. Yeah, don't we? We have all these old habits, and as soon as we face a problem, you know, is the first thing we think about Chapter 6 of Chanti Deva? Or is the first thing we think about, you know, what's this external situation happening to me for, and who can I blame? Yeah, don't you think so?
Well, just that I'm looking at is that for fortitude and the other two, you would have to be practicing the Dharma to be able to cultivate that quality in those situations.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're not practicing the Dharma.
Right.
And but I see that number three is a consistent daily
Number three is that dealing with the difficulties you have when you're explicitly practicing the Dharma. Okay? If I go to town and the guy at the gas station starts swearing at me, that's not the fortitude of practicing the Dharma. I have to deal with the fortitude of not getting angry and retaliating back at him.
Well, what I'm saying, not doing that is me practicing the Dharma, is not retaliating and not throwing a match.
Yeah, not doing that is practicing
right.
the Dharma.
Right.
Yeah, but the fortitude of practicing the Dharma means the fortitude when you have difficulties when practicing the Dharma. You're thinking fortitude of practicing the Dharma means when you're practicing the Dharma having fortitude.
In daily life.
But that's not the meaning of it. Okay? It's when there's explicit difficulties. Like the difficulty of going to get teachings. Yeah, you have to undergo certain difficulty to go and get teachings. And some people aren't willing to drive a half an hour across town to get teachings. Or they aren't willing to do who knows what. Yeah? But that's the fortitude of the Dharma, how to create the situations where you can actively practice the Dharma. Okay? I think the problem is just how you're understanding the term. Yeah? Anything else? Yeah? Sure.
This fortitude really speaks to me. I feel like this is an enormous part of the path, the ability to bear my experience without reacting unskillfully, knowing that it is my own karma ripening and using that experience to create virtue. I will spend lifetimes just on this.
Yeah. Virtue. Yeah. Exactly. That's very well put. Mm-hmm. Very, very well put. Yeah. And it's quite a practice. That's why they say there's no austerity like fortitude. Yeah, there's no ascetic practice like developing this kind of inner strength and fortitude. And it's so practical, you know. Because if we don't have this fortitude, we're just going to create so much negative karma that it's going to destroy the rest, you know, all of our virtue, and we're not going to get anywhere.
How do we work with the mind that goes into it? I mean, that, you know, that says, oh, it's just my karma, but it becomes resentment, or is my karma going to be very bad?
Okay. So the question, how to correctly understand that, when what is meant when we say this is the result of my own negative karma. Okay? So first of all, when we have these misunderstandings, oh, it's my negative karma, I'm such a bad person, I failed, I deserve to suffer, why do I have so much negative karma but other people don't, it's not fair. You know? That kind of thing shows we don't understand what karma is. So karma simply means action, our body, actions of our body, speech, and mind. We're the only ones who create our own actions. Nobody else does that. Okay? So the whole idea is we are responsible for our actions and for the results of our actions. And so what this means, it's like, grow up, you know. If you don't like this result, stop putting yourself in this situation. Stop creating the cause. Yeah? Because, you know, part of our baby mind we want our cake and we want to eat it too. So we want to be able to be, you know, nasty and whiny and explode and tell people off and complain and grump and fight and do all of that. And we also want everybody to be nice to us. Yeah. But, yeah, we want two contradictory things. Yeah. So,
like what I do.
Yeah, so this is kind of what this whole thing is saying, is like, look, your mind wants two contradictory things. It's impossible. Yeah? So if you want to act like this, then accept the results of acting like that. Yeah? And if you don't like the results, stop acting like that and creating the causes for those results. Yeah, so it's really, you know, this whole thing is putting us really face to face about how much do I really believe in the law of karma and its effects. Yeah, or when difficulty comes, you know, what do I do when difficulty comes? The same thing I did before I even knew the Dharma. Yeah, and we all have our old emotional patterns of what we do when unpleasant things happen, don't we? Yeah? So then we just act out our old emotional habit, but expect the situation to turn out differently. Yeah? So it's like, you know, expecting to turn the fire up on the soup, walk away for 5 hours and come back and it's not going to be burnt. You know? It's what we're expecting is unrealistic. So we've somehow got to get that through this stubborn mind of ours. Mm-hmm. Okay? So saying that this is the product of my karma does not mean we deserve to suffer. It does not mean we're getting punished, because in Buddhism there's no reward in punishment. There's just effects. Yeah. So take the I out of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because these misunderstandings of karma, oh, I'm so bad, I deserve to suffer, I must be such a horrible person that this happened to me. I'm worse than anybody else. Okay. So you see all those things, there's a lot of I in it, isn't there? Yeah. And similarly, you know, sometimes people misunderstand karma and say, oh, somebody's suffering. If I help them, I'm interfering in their karma. So I better not help them. Right? So somebody is going to get hit by a car. They're bleeding in the middle of the street. And you say, oh, if I interfere and call the dog, you know, call 911, you know, I'm interfering with your karma and that's not good for you. No, that's total baloney. That's a complete misunderstanding. Yeah. And also using karma as a way to put down whole groups of oppressed people. Well, they just created the karma to be poor, or they created the karma to be oppressed. No, you know, that is, saying that is no excuse at all for our lack of compassion. Anything else? Yeah.
For the fortitude of enduring suffering, mm-hmm. when we are looking at it, we're taking the eye out of it, this is to be expected, this is samsara.
Yeah.
But then it really boils down to the same thing, because samsara is playing out of our karma.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of looks at it a little less.
But what?
Less with the eye.
Yeah, so you're saying that just to, when negative things or bad situations come about, to say this is the nature of samsara can be easier than saying this is a result of my karma, because it takes the I out of it. Yeah.
It may be easier for some people who are in some situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't get guilty.
Yeah, this is samsara? What do I expect? If I don't like samsara, why haven't I practiced before and gotten myself out of samsara? Well, because I spent too much time lying on the beach, or too much time going to movies in previous lives. I didn't do the practice, so I didn't get liberated. So here I am.
So the things that are coming at us now are a result of our past actions, and how we deal with them are creating our future
right.
karma. So really we have the ability then to stop it dead in its tracks, especially the negative karma,
yeah.
the contaminated.
Right, exactly. You know, when we're experiencing the ripening of negative karma, our response to that is crucial, because if we respond out of afflictions, we create more destructive karma. If we respond with wisdom or compassion or any of these methods of fortitude, then we cut it right there. Yeah? And we create virtue instead of non-virtue. So very powerful.
Mm-hmm. What helps me with this too is just remembering that we all have fortitude, because we've all done incredibly difficult things chasing after worldly pursuits. We've gone through extensive suffering.
Yeah.
And so we have it. It's just, it's been misdirected.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, very true. We have lots of worldly fortitude, or lots of fortitude that's been directed incorrectly towards worldly things. Yeah. If you're working at a job and your boss yells and screams at you, do you yell and scream back at your boss? No. Because you know what's going to happen if you do. But if you go home and your spouse yells and screams at you, what do? You yell and scream louder. Yeah? So something's not working there. But we, you know, we do have fortitude for, and we do have joyous effort for lots of negative things. But we just need to gear them and steer them towards what's what's positive. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Someone asked, how do we increase our fortitude?
Okay. This is the things. I was just in this talk talking about some of the ways to think in order to increase your fortitude. And then read Working with Anger and look at the videos, you know, that I made in Mexico. And then really take those techniques and practice them in real life. Practice them in situations that you've dealt with in the past, that you've had experience with in the past, and practice, you know, imagine that situation and practice thinking in the new way according to how the Dharma teachings are telling us to think. Okay? So fortitude isn't a thing of, you know, just sit there and, you know, grind my teeth and bear it. It's not that. It's actively being able to transform how we see the situation.
Yeah. Well, I've just been listening lately when we dedicate that prayer every day at lunch. You know, when we say, we those who have harmed me even up to the point of killing me.
Yes.
And sometimes I stop and go, that is shocking.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. That the prayer that we say after lunch. Yep. But that's the point. I mean, that's why we're practicing the Dharma. And we can only really call ourselves practitioners if we try and return abuse with kindness. Yeah? And if you can return abuse with kindness, then the abuse doesn't get to you. Yeah, sometimes people think, oh, if I return it with kindness, then the person's going to be doing more to me. But if you can really return kindness when somebody's insulting you or deriding you or who knows what, that means that you're able to pull yourself out of your old way of looking at the situation and see the other person suffering. You know, or see it as a karmic maturation. And if you see it in another way like that, then it doesn't affect you in the old way that abuse and derision and denigration and criticism and insult used to affect you. Hmm. Okay, so let's dedicate. And then try and practice this. Huh? Thinking about some situations, you know, that I also find it very helpful to, if I'm reading something or thinking, you know, the news, to imagine being in that situation, like to imagine being in Nepal and, okay, the building around me falls apart and I don't have a place to live, then how can I use the Dharma to keep my mind steady and strong in that situation and to be able to be of benefit to others. Yeah. So just any situations you read about, you know, think, apply these different techniques to them.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Niryatayami. Do,
to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma,
done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Yashavasti Abbey in the West Glory.